Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I am really excited to tell you I have a comment to read today. So it's actually two comments from the same person. So I'm going to kind of blend them together. So it's just one big comment. That always makes me feel better when there's one big comment. So here's what she says. She says, "Hello, Mr. Leap. I enjoy listening to your program. I must admit that you have me listening to books I never dreamed I would." Now, that's just music to my ears. I'm just so excited when I get people to do things they wouldn't normally do. She goes on to say, "I am enjoying learning about Sir Winston and didn't know that he was from a dysfunctional family." And yes, that is a sad fact, but it's a true fact. He was from a very dysfunctional family. Now, she goes on to say, "I listen every week. I am blessed to be able to listen at my job. I just put my headphones on, and while I'm listening, I'm working. I do like it when you have your wife, Deborah, on the show to discuss the books." Now, Deborah has not been attending our broadcast lately. She's been home taking care of grandkids and things like that. So, but she will be back for the George Washington programs. She goes on to say, "The current book on Winston Churchill is interesting. I'm amazed he turned out as well as he did with the parents that he had. I just don't understand one comment. Winston's mother, Jenny, had the panther look. I'm not sure what you mean by that. She looked like a panther, or her manner was such as one? Not sure. Other than that, I'm listening and interested. Thank you for bringing us such good literature." So I thought that was a great comment, and here's what I would like to say about the panther look. Remember, Paul Johnson is quoting one of her peers that said she had the look of a panther. And I believe what they were saying is, I mean, she was a very alluring woman. She was very attractive. If you look at her history, I think she had a lot of sexual energy. And even when her husband was alive, it appears that she took on lovers. So I think if you want to look at the fact that they called her a panther, she was probably just a very alluring, very captivating woman. But again, even if you're looking at a beautiful black panther, you could be attracted to them, but man, you better watch out because they can eat you alive. So I think that's exactly what that means. So hopefully that will help anybody else out there. Now, if you look up some of the modern terms for panthers, it says that panthers are young women that like older men, but I don't think that's true in her case. In fact, after her husband died, she married two men about the same age as her son, Winston. And so, you know, she actually liked younger men. And I think in today's terms, they would call her a cougar, not a panther. So anyway, all that aside, I just think she was probably a very attractive, alluring woman, but she was also probably very deadly. So anyway, we'll just go on with that now. Now, what I want to do today is just kind of remind you of a few things. I'm going to maybe break into maybe some different thoughts for a little while. And remember, like his father, Winston Churchill did have this meteoric rise in political popularity, but he was equally tumultuous in his falls politically. Now, there's a big question, but why did that happen? So for the next several programs, what I want to do is I want to provide you some what I feel is really necessary background on why Winston Churchill fell from public favor because of this disaster at the Dardanelles. And I think we need to recognize that his fall is more than just misjudgment on Mr. Churchill's part. Now, obviously, there was some misjudgment and maybe some impetuousness there in that decision to go after the Dardanelles. But we're going to talk a little bit about this today. Now, the thing that I want you to understand is there is a little more at float. In other words, there were other forces working against Winston Churchill at this time. And I think it's something that he had to learn to face to actually get him ready to take on the role of prime minister in World War II. Now, I just wanted to let you know that the reason why I'm doing this is over the last couple of days, I had the opportunity to listen to several history lectures about this time period in Winston's life. And it was by a professor. His name was J. Rufus Fears. Now, he was a distinguished history professor here at the University of Oklahoma for over two decades. He did die in 2012, but I found his lectures to be captivating. They were engaging, and certainly they were exciting, and I really think it was worth the effort. Professor Fears, he was just a master storyteller. I mean, he was so captivating. He's a great instructor, very much full of facts. He has all these awards behind him. If you wanted to look him up, you could look him up on the internet, and it'll tell you a lot about him. Now, I really believe that his analysis of why Churchill fell from public favor are really worth knowing. And I think it will give you background to the Dardanelles that certainly Johnson doesn't provide us. But here he does provide it. Now, the lectures that I listen to are available through the Teaching Company. And I don't know if you know much about the Teaching Company, but they're also called the Great Courses. And his course is called Churchill. And it's really very inexpensive to get it. So if you're interested, I think it would be a worthwhile investment for you. And you can buy the DVDs. You can see the professor. You can also buy a little guidebook that goes along with it. So here's what I learned from these Professor Fears lectures. And I just wanted to stress that I think this is background that we need to know. And maybe not every historian maybe is really willing to talk about it. But I think we all can agree on this fact that Winston Churchill was a controversial figure in history. Now, I think he was much more than that. I think he was probably one of the most dynamic leaders we've ever seen or ever will see. And historians seem to be a little bit conflicted about him. But what Professor Fears thought, and this is kind of a quote from him, I'm going to just read it to you. So this is what he says. He says, many of his personal qualities tended to provoke controversy, including his refusal to stay in his box, to compromise his vision, and to avoid difficult decisions. And he goes on to say, the Dardanelles campaign was a major controversy and seminal event in Churchill's life. It turned into a disaster because of Churchill's impetuosity and his inability to interpret human character and recognize those who bore him ill. Now, I know we talked about this somewhat in past lectures. And one of the things that I want to say about Professor Fears is he really is a Churchill man. I mean, he's pro-Churchill. And he even mentions in his lectures that historians do not do him justice. A lot of modern historians don't do him justice. But really, the thing that I think Professor Fears brings out the best is that Churchill really was a genius. And I know we've talked about that. And even when he took over First Lord of the Admiralty, I mean, he really did have some great ideas about the tank. He had great ideas about building a naval air force, but he didn't have a lot of support for that, and there are reasons behind that. But what Professor Fears feels about Churchill is the fact that he was a genius made people envy him. In other words, if you look at the fall around Dardanelles, Professor Fears feels that the other people politically, let's say in political high positions, were actually jealous of him, and they wanted him to fall. They wanted him to fail. And so really, they set him up. But let's just talk briefly about what he says about staying in his box. And the thing is, if you look at people that are genius, and I think Rufus Fears does say pretty clearly that there's not many geniuses in the political world because of envy and jealousy. In other words, if they're going to show up everybody else, then they're going to find a way to either politically slander them or to, you know, vote them out of office. And so he feels like that's exactly what was happening with Winston, because he did not stay within his box. And, for example, when he was first Lord of the Admiralty, the people above him felt that it was his main job to keep the budget balanced. But Winston came in there with the fantastic ideas. And remember, we talked about this briefly, is that, you know, the great British Navy was beginning to suffer before World War One. They weren't investing as much, well, let's say, the inventive genius in it. They were still, all the ships are run by coal, and they couldn't travel as fast. And so he changed the ships from coal power to petroleum, fuel powered, and made them faster and better. And so he also, you know, wanted to add a naval air force, but most of the people above him felt that the airplane was just for sports. It could never be used, well, in a military situation. And then, of course, he wanted to develop the tank, and he took a Rolls Royce and he put metal plates on it. And they called it, you know, Churchill's Folly. And the thing is, they were jealous of his inventive genius, and they were kind of stick in the muds that didn't want to change. But yet Winston knew that if they were going to compete with Germany, they were going to have to do better than Germany. And they were going to have to show Germany that they were better. And so they did not like it. And the one thing he did is he increased the budget of the naval department. He increased it from 30 million pounds to 50 million. So he was not really, many consider that, well, he just wasn't doing his job. What's he doing thinking about going out and, changing all of our things? And, they were still fighting the old way. And Winston knew there was new ways that had to happen. Now, one of the things he also did, and this Professor Fears does bring this out, is he did not really know how to read people well. And this was on a personal level, but also, who could really help him. And, he did not consider some of the advice of some of his admirals because, well, he thought they weren't thinking new enough. But then we brought up Sir John Fisher. Now, he did take advice from Sir John Fisher, and he was not a very well-respected man, and he was really somewhat quirky, and he probably didn't think inside the box either. But the point is, it was John Fisher who really, agreed with the idea of going into the Dardanelles, and maybe even had been behind the decision. And remember, Churchill was really frustrated that the men were just being slaughtered on these battlefields. And he believed you had to fight the Germans in Germany. And that was the whole plan behind the Dardanelles, to take that strait of water. And then they could actually go up through, Austria, Hungary, and into Germany, and then fight the Germans on their own soil. And so we know that the plan, in many ways, would have worked. But John Fisher, he supported the plan, then he didn't support the plan, and then we know that the prime ministers didn't know what to do about the plan, and they finally told Winston to go forward with it, and then Winston jumped right into it, and they had this major plan to take the Dardanelles, and it was almost too late, and then there wasn't enough time to really do the right effort. And so therefore it blew up in Winston's face. Also, if you remember that it was Winston Churchill's idea to go ahead and defend Antwerp from the Germans, and that's, that was in Belgium. And people that had put him in charge of the Admiralty said, well, that's not his job. And, of course, Winston Churchill went there himself, started to defend Antwerp. And, the newspapers went against him. The press went against him. The people in the government went against him. And, he was blamed for all these problems. Now, they did have to evacuate from Antwerp. But it was later that the King of Belgium himself declared that the thoughts of what happened in Antwerp actually is what secured the victory in World War I. And by holding Antwerp the way Churchill did, it really enabled the British to send more troops to Calais and the other ports along that coast. And the thing is, if they hadn't taken those ports, they would have never have won the war. And so here, Churchill and his desire to do that was actually correct, but he didn't have the support. But unfortunately, because of the press and because of the anti-war sentiment in England, then the idea behind Antwerp was always a fiasco. And it was the same with the Dardanelles. It was always a fiasco, and it was always blamed on Churchill. Now, it's these things happen. But one of the things, again, that Rufus Fears brings out is that one of the other main factors of why, let's say, Churchill had people coming after him is, that even though Winston Churchill's father did not support him, and, there are letters from his father to Winston, especially at the time when he decided to go to Sandhurst and only qualified, to be, in the cavalry. His father wrote him such a scathing letter and was so negative. And it says, you never would amount to anything. You're never going to amount to anything. And it was really disheartening. But Churchill still supported his father and actually wrote a biography about his father. He defended his father in the biography, and so all the critics that his father had drawn now became his critics. And so really, it really is unusual that Churchill loved his father so much and wanted to defend his reputation. And of course, the point is, that may have not been very astute for him politically to do that. Now, Here's one other thing that even Churchill brings this out in his early life is Professor Fears feels that Winston just could not read other people's character. He could not recognize the people who really liked him and the people that really disliked him. He could not tell the difference between people who saw him as an enemy or who saw him as a friend. And one of the things he brings this out in his early life is that if you remember, he wanted to go fight under Horatio Kitchener. And Kitchener never liked Churchill, even though outwardly he was always very friendly to him. Now, when you look at the whole situation with the Dardanelles, the thing that the Dardanelles needed was troops, and it was Kitchener who was over the troops, and he set Churchill up and wouldn't send troops to the Dardanelles. And so, really, as we've said in previous programs, the problem for the Dardanelles was really the government. It was the prime minister. It was the heads of the army. It was the other leaders. And, of course, John Fisher, when he recommended the Dardanelles, then he quit. And when he resigned, he sent letters out to a lot of people condemning Winston Churchill when really the problem really was on his own shoulders. And when you put something in letters and it gets out to the press, then it kind of sticks. Now, the thing is, we know that the Dardanelles was really hard on Winston. He knew there was a lot of trouble there and the disaster, the loss of life and all that. And, you know, he really had a lot of grief over that problem. But the point is, there were more people involved in it than just him. And, you know, Churchill, one of the things that maybe he also had to face, and he did make a lot of enemies. Even his life, he had a very, you know, I would call it a slice and dice tongue. You know, he was very sarcastic. And, you know, if he didn't like what, let's say, another member of Parliament was doing, he could pretty much do slice and dice, you know, on the scene to really, you know, make them either look foolish or stupid. And so anyway, there were people laying for him, and they did set him up. And so that's really too bad. But one of the things that also this Professor Fears brings out is, you know, there were a lot of things known in the government, but a lot of those government leaders leaked these things about what had gone on the inside. They leaked them to the press, and so they were really, really working hard, you know, to get at Churchill and to, you know, because he was a genius, because he had so much ability, well, he made them look bad. And so, you know, they didn't want him around. Now, unfortunately, you know, this does happen to some really bright people. But Winston Churchill really ended up, he had very few friends that would really stick with him. And right after the Dardanelles disaster, if you look at David Lloyd George, I mean, he considered, Winston Churchill considered him a very good friend. And yet he offered Churchill no support after the Dardanelles disaster. And even his wife, Clemmy, tried to show him that David Lloyd George is the one that really set him up. She tried to tell him, he's your enemy. But Winston Churchill couldn't see it. The same thing with Lord Asquith. Even when, let's say, you know, the Parliament was really wanting to investigate about the Dardanelles, even the Prime Minister at that time was Lord Asquith, and it would have been Churchill's right to speak in his own defense about the disaster, and Lord Asquith refused to allow Churchill to speak. And so again, they totally muted his, you know, his defense of himself. And so, you know, what a horrible thing to go through. But, you know, one of the things that the Dardanelles disaster was very humbling for Winston Churchill. It showed him that, you know, men in power were not able to run wars. And so it really, in the long run, it did work in his favor. Now, I think one of the most remarkable things about this that, you know, we tend to overlook is that Churchill, once he was kind of down and out after the Dardanelles, I mean, he was taken out as First Lord of the Admiralty. He was put in some ridiculous position in the cabinet. And what did he do? Did he, you know, just dry up and blow away? No. He requested to be able to go to the trenches. In other words, he said, look, this is a horrible war. You know, I'm going to go out and fight along with the soldiers. And so he did that. Well, it looks like we're running out of time for today. And the thing is, we'll continue this next time. So remember, we are quickly approaching the second book in this series, and it's also by Paul Johnson, and the book is titled George Washington, Founding Father. You can find this book on Amazon for about $13 for Prime members. You can also find a good used copy of the book for around $4 at abebooks.com. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.